And then there was 10. Hello, everybody. First and Now, episode 10 is on. Matt Baker, Jamie Cartmell, live from BC Lions Studios. Lot to get into. Favorites in the Stanley Cup playoffs are dropping like flies. Our calendar is inching toward May, which means camp is pretty much here. What's up, Jamie?
Too much. Same music.
How was your Easter?
Apparently, same music. Easter was good for three of the four members of our family who were down seeing a boy band in Seattle on Thursday night. Took the day off school on Thursday and went down to see the Why Don't We Boys in
the
concert.
Who? What?
Exactly.
Who? How much did that set you back?
I've stopped asking questions. When I was a kid,
you
we used to go
the credit
to
card statement.
When we were kids in E-Town, we used to go to A&W occasionally, and they would bring the food right to the car, and that the people who would deliver the food back then, it was women,
they
waitresses. They would have like the change maker like on their belts. That's what I wear as a belt in my house. It's just it doesn't dispense coins; it just dispenses bills.
They had that back bills. Then? Like you did you roll up to A&W in your horse carriage or
my dad was driving. Yeah, it was pretty cool. Anyway,
that's cool.
So
another concert for your kids. Well, good for them.
So they went down on Thursday and then they spent the day there Friday, because why
in
wouldn't
Seattle.
You? Yep.
Yep.
Stayed overnight again Friday night at the at a Hilton. And then they had basketball on Saturday down in Renton. So meanwhile, I was back doing what I do, you know, the laundry, the cleaning, the building of a pallet bed.
Fixing toilets.
For Emily. She decided she wound up. Yeah. This is the wonder of having daughters, and I'm blessed to have daughters, but I've painted both of their rooms twice since we've moved into this house.
So twice in the last 8-9 years?
5 years.
Like five. Oh, that's it.
Into
okay.
This new house. 5 years.
Well, that's
both
what
of
a
their,
dad's for.
Both rooms have been completely painted, then primed again, then repainted. And then now Emily's gone to this whole all white with a slate blue wall with a pallet bed that I had to build. And just now she wants hanging plants. I don't know. I think there's just going to be a room full of cats and she'll live there till she's 30 plus. But what do I know?
Yeah, full disclosure, you ducked out of here a bit early on Thursday, was it? Because you had to go to Home Depot. So
yeah.
So well, that was a successful trip to Home Depot then?
Yeah, I can't complain. They typically have everything that I need. I did get some lumber from a different lumber yard, got chased by a dog in the lumber
yard. Oh, yeah?
I don't quite understand. I don't just roll in. It's not that I need help, but I always look for a little bit of, like, I don't want to overstep what I think is the customer business relationship. I mean, just rolling onto the lumber yard, but quite often you go to these places. I always wonder about businesses where they know all the rules and they know all the stuff and they just expect that you do too. So you kind of roll up to a counter and you kind of ask them, you know, for what you need. And then they just kind of go, yeah, it's in the lumber yard. Well, sorry, Captain Lumber. I didn't know that. I didn't know how this business works. It's not like, you know, I don't work here. You know, I don't know all the rules.
Right.
So, yeah, and I got chased by a dog. This Captain was a couple lumber. Weeks ago at a lumber yard out where I am. But I didn't get chased. He just was like, I don't even know if it was the dog that belonged to the lumber yard. Could have just been a random dog.
What kind of a dog was it? Was it like a scary dog? Like a Rottweiler
sort of
or something?
Yeah, kind of a shepherd cross. Seemed,
that'd be okay.
But just, you know, dogs, you don't know. Dogs
get your
quick.
Heart rate going.
Yeah, dogs are quick. But no, overall, good weekend. Weather was nice. And
was it ever?
Yeah. It was a little bit of rain here and there, too. But it was good. Some sports, a lot of different sports on and stuff. So enjoyed that. So usually hit the couch by 7 o'clock or so after a heavy day of building and painting. So, no, it was good. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, 3 of 4 division winners in the Stanley Cup playoffs are gone. You and I were texting, speaking of Thursday night, as St. Louis was shocking Winnipeg in Game 5 there. Jaden Schwartz,
yes.
15 seconds to go. And then, of course, they finish it off in Game 6.
You're
St. Louis Blues, Canada's team. They're moving on.
You know me and the whiteboard designing breakouts in the office here. I don't quite know what you're trying to do, freezing the puck with 38 seconds left in the game behind your own net. I don't know what that dude was doing.
Yeah.
You talk about asking for trouble, but they paid for it.
Bang, bang, play.
And then they kind of came out and they'd quit. Clearly, they'd quit after that game because they came out and got schooled. I mean, they scored a late one, but whatever. It was over.
they had something like, what, six shots on goal through almost two periods? Like, it was, you talk about, and of course now it's coming out that a couple of their top guys, Ehlers, Line A, maybe weren't healthy, maybe weren't 100%, but that's still no excuse for a pitiful performance. And
isn't that your, you sound like you have that fake, the fake Trump account that always goes off on
NHL Trump. That's the best account on Twitter.
Yes.
Yeah. The fake news Winnipeg Jets. Again. Yes.
It's good
stuff. Up in poorly populated Bell MTS place. Give it a follow. Trump_NHL. If you like entertainment.
And I know we covered this earlier. I guess we're supposed to hop all over Canadian teams. But again, as noted, what, 16 Canadians on the St. Louis Blues? And I think all of their defensemen are Canadian. So... that's as Canadian as
Petrangelo, good Olympian there, yeah.
It's a weird name. I can't. I know he's been in the league for a while, but it's a strange name. I always want to call it Peter Angelo, because wasn't there a goalie whose last name was Peter Angelo?
Frank Peter Angelo, right? Yeah. And Pittsburgh and Hartford, was he not? Yes.
Right, and then that dude's name is...
They might be, and you know what? They might be related, too, which would be... We'd have to check on that, which would be interesting, because it's clearly different pronunciations. But it's funny, you know, we won't go on and on about the St. Louis Blues, but... Dinner with the in-laws on Friday night, Good Friday, a little early Easter celebration, and my father-in-law, Elliot Papp, was a long-time beat writer for the Vancouver Sun, covered the Canucks, among other sports, in his career, and he still follows hockey quite religiously, and he said, and we forgot about this until he reminded me, he said, there was a game in December, mid-December, Sunday afternoon, where the Canucks went into St. Louis and just pummeled them 6-7-1, something like that. Besser and Peterson each had a bunch of points, couple goals. And at that point, Chad Johnson was the Blues goaltender, and they sent him down after that. The next day, the Blues got into a fight in practice, and then they called up Jordan Binnington, who now, of course, is a Calder nominee. And they went from last in the NHL, and now they're... have home ice advantage in round two, and that all kind of turned a corner for them after a game against Vancouver. It's funny how it works.
Yeah, you don't know it at the time, but sometimes those moves spark you. I mean, even here, I mean, in 2006, you know, Wally went from, you know, Antonio Warren in the backfield.
There you
go. He had seen enough of his act, and in came Joe Smith, and the rest of that season was history. And 2011, you start out 0-5, and then you acquire, you know...
Arland
Bruce and Tad Cornegay and... Kareem Smith, I think, is an underrated addition because he wasn't really well known. But, I mean, Kareem was big up front that year, too. So those additions, you know, I guess January is what, 3 months into the season, but it is a long season. That's the thing, too. I think about, you know, when Calgary lost, I mean, first time ever, number one seeds have been eliminated in the first round.
Both of them, yeah.
I'm actually kind of surprised it hasn't happened before. But for those teams, the season is I don't want to be the season is too long guy, but the season's too long. Guys had their positions sewn up a long time ago.
You have to find a balance between staying competitive and treating games as meaningful. Like Tampa, they clinched first overall with like 3 weeks to go, it seemed, right? So clearly they entered the playoffs not, I don't want to say not motivated, but Columbus had to scratch and claw. They had to beat, I think they had to win a game against the New York Rangers in a shootout.
Yeah.
To clinch at the end, right? I think it was their second last game where they knocked out Montreal for the last spot. So, yeah, you come across this every time where a team like Columbus, like Colorado, they've quote-unquote been in the playoffs for weeks.
Even that Oiler run in 06.
Same thing.
The 8-seed, barely make the playoffs, but they're playing playoff hockey. These teams that are playing playoff hockey for the last month of the regular season go up against these teams that have kind of... Well, let's stay healthy. Let's, you know, kind of float to the end of the year. And we've got home ice sewn up. And then they try and find another level of play.
Mm-hmm.
And they can't match a team that's playing at another level just to be there. And it's not surprising.
Yeah, so as we speak, Calgary done, Winnipeg done. We're recording this on the morning of Game 7 between the Leafs and Bruins. So could be no more Canadian pride for anybody.
I guess,
once this gets that's going to be must see TV. Couple game sevens.
Yep.
On Tuesday, Washington, defending champs, on the ropes again. The pressure's on for them. They don't want to be the fourth division winner to be ousted in round one But we've been talking about this for the last couple of weeks, really. An awesome time of year for sports. Awesome time for football. We did a little camp countdown last week. But a big week for the football club coming up this Thursday night. The Orange Helmet Awards dinner, headlined by former Super Bowl winner. He was a winner on that first New England team. He was backing up Tom Brady. Won the AFC Championship that year in Pittsburgh. Remember, Brady got knocked out.
I think youngest guy to go to a Pro Bowl, too.
He might have been, yeah. He was an NFL passing leader. Drew Bledsoe, so should be another memorable night saluting amateur football in this province. Yeah. Jamie, you've been at this gig a while now, longest-serving communications director in the CFL, if not pro football. Special time with Orange Helmet Awards.
Yeah, that, it's an event that's, I think it's raised almost $1 million for grassroots football in the province. And I think not bad for your little old CFL team to put, $1 million into the hands of people who can continue to grow the game. So I think that, job well done all the way around for a number of years, the Lou Pisaglias and of course the Bob Ackles who's created those events and now Jamie Terrace, who's, that's his baby and stuff. So it takes a lot of work from a lot of people in our organization to pull it off, and they certainly deserve a lot of kudos as well. And that's the thing about all the things that we do in this club is that, not contracting things out. There's a lot of people in this organization who do a lot of heavy lifting.
Right.
And there's not a lot of us, and they deserve full marks for the work that they do, for sure.
Yep, so that's going to be another special night. And every year attending this and helping put out the content pieces that go together, I'm always sort of impressed with, for the amount of negative talk about football being dangerous and a lot of parents saying they don't want their kids playing football. I mean, we see it every year, and you hear coaches of these amateur teams that win these awards, you hear them talk about how they've made the game more safe. And year after year after year, there's all kinds of great amateur players and amateur teams being rewarded.
Yeah. I mean, not to go off on the whole player safety issue and stuff in terms of football. Football, arguably today, has never been safer.
Right.
And I think when you maybe start to review 10 years from now, what's gone on with football, where football is with players and players who have, kids who have played football and stuff like that, I think those numbers will change dramatically because so much has been done in the last number of years with just safety within the game, how the rules are enforced, the equipment and all that stuff. I was reading, do you know what is the most heavily concussed amateur athlete in Canada?
Soccer?
Girls ringette.
Ringette?
Yes.
I heard something about soccer numbers climbing, but interesting.
Okay. Yes, that's the most, it's, so, movies sometimes give things a bad rap and everything else. And, again, and I don't want to sound like I'm comparing the two. I'll take a guy delivering a stiff hit, clean hit over the middle on a guy who's caught the ball as part of the game than a guy cross-checking another guy in the face who doesn't want to throw the mitts down and go at it. And like that to me, again, the players are ultimately responsible for each other's safety, whether it's on the field and on the ice. And there's some pretty devastating hits that occur in football, but the malice that players, deal out with one another on the ice sometimes is,
it's become gladiator.
And then what do fans and the media, they blame the league. They blame the league because, that should be at least a 4-game. Nobody ever blames the players for what they do to each other. I'm always curious about that.
That lack of respect, as you say.
It seems strange. Anyway, but...
But it's going to be a good night. And again, you've done this for a few years now. I've been here, this would be the fourth year for me. So I've seen Cameron Wake was a great one in 2016. We had Matt Dunnigan. That was more of a CFL-themed one, but Matt was great, and he spoke great on player safety.
Herschel Walker did a really nice job one year. Jeff Garcia did a really nice job one year. So
the Fluties came the one time, right?
The one that I actually missed because I'd gone away was Rudy from Notre Dame.
Oh, okay.
Would have liked to have seen that one. That's
Rudy Rudiger?
Rudy Rudiger. Yeah, it was a good story. But compelling guests, compelling speakers, and it's a good night, and it's a great night for amateur football, and they get to celebrate their champions from last year. And a lot of people, again, not just like our organization, we put a lot of work, a lot of people who give a lot of time for kids to play football, coaches and organizers and you know, it's parents. So a lot of driving around and stuff like that. So referees, all that. They all deserve kudos on that night. That night is all about them.
Yeah, and again, as we're talking, there's a BC Junior football camp taking place at the facility. They were doing some testing in the locker room. So G. Roy Simon, Neil McAvoy saw head scout Torrey Hunter, director of player personnel Torrey Hunter.
Right.
He always reminds me, he's not a scout anymore. He's the director of player personnel. So seeing this and seeing backdrop set up, I don't know, we did a little bit about this in episode 9, but it's coming. It feels real now.
Yeah, you're getting towards the end of April, and I mean, the draft is, what, a week Thursday, and before you know it, those kids are flying in, you know, along with everybody else, first year Lions anyway, on that first week or that second week of May, and up we go. So it's going to be, you know, it's going to be interesting. There are obviously some things that have to get sorted out that are in the news, and we trust that they will, and it should be great. We just obviously hope for some good weather up in Kamloops, which we've always had, and they're great hosts and amazing facilities up there that we've talked about before. So it's close to a month long journey to figure out who you are and who you might be. And everyone has a lot of optimism going into training camp. We're no different, and maybe even a little bit more optimism this year, as we probably should have. But it's going to be very interesting, and I'm really interested to see just all the different dynamics coming together, whether it's new players, the new coaching staff, a mix of young and old on the coaching staff, a mix of experience and inexperience within the team that everybody obviously always has. It's going to be really interesting to see what Ed and Devon and Torrey and Neil and the scout, what we put together here. It's going to be must see TV.
And I'm glad you mentioned the draft, the CFL draft, as you say, a week from Thursday, May 2nd, 5:00 p.m. Pacific time. A couple fans asking me over the course of the off season and seeing comments based on, you know, all our combine coverage.
Yep.
I mean, it's hard to get, I'm paraphrasing, but some fans saying, well, it's hard to get excited when the club doesn't have a pick until round 3, 26th overall. Of course, yeah, there were some moves made last year to try and make a push for the Grey Cup.
Yep.
Ultimately, didn't work out. That's what happens. It's a risk. I mean, first and second round picks were traded for players that were needed to get into the playoffs. Tyrell Sutton, a prime example. If we don't have Tyrell Sutton last year, we don't win that game in Calgary, I don't think, in October.
Yeah, I
and
agree.
One less win means no playoffs. So,
yep.
But I will, to any of those concerned, and I'm sure you'll agree with this as well, Jamie, and us being on hand at the Combine in Toronto, a lot of intrigue. This is a deep draft.
Yes.
You're going to get some players in these mid to late rounds that, you know, are going to play a role on special teams, maybe compete for starting positions on offense or defense down the road. I always say an example is Jordan Herdman-Reed, 7th-round pick 2 years ago.
Yeah, that's a good
point.
Didn't
test well, by his own admission, didn't test well, didn't have strong combine numbers, and G. Roy Simon will always say this as well. But that's a guy who's sort of been kind of a go-to guy on special teams and has proven he could play reps on defense.
Sure. I mean, that's a very good example. You know, David Neville, I think we got in the third round last year. He was, I think he was thought to be a pick that would be higher than that. Obviously we've had some very, very good picks in the last couple of years in the first couple of rounds, but even dating back to a guy like David Menard, I mean, he was a 6th-round pick, I believe, or a 4th-round pick. I mean, there are some guys, sometimes guys don't necessarily truly mature for a couple more years. Guys mature at you know, athletically and physically at different rates. Some guys are at their peak. That's why you see a really high draft pick kind of sort of flame out because he sort of plateaus and he doesn't really continue to develop. You want a guy in that second and third round who comes in and ends up having, you know, that 7-8 year career on special teams and as a backup defensive player, or, you know, I'm talking about guys who are later round guys. You expect your first and second round guys to start eventually. That's the whole idea.
That's the goal.
But they're, you know, even a guy like, Edward Godin. I mean, he's a kid that's, you know, he went back to school that year. He came back. He played some games last year. I mean, he'll go down and smack somebody. And even guys who other teams have given up on. I mean, like, right. Like we picked up like Wayne Moore last year. Great special teams guy. Guy who, you know, I think after we saw the game in Ottawa where we had two running backs go down and the fullback go down,
proved
a game that we probably could have won that game if we were able to run the ball. We just didn't have the personnel. Like, we needed to have Ed went out and got a guy like Wayne Moore who proved to be like a great special teams addition as well. So, yeah, I would not I wouldn't despair about us not picking until the third round. And that could change too. I mean,
could change any minute. Yeah.
You can pick up some very good players in the third, fourth, and fifth round. And then that's, you know, I think the expectation is that we're bringing in guys who are going to compete. By no means have we mortgaged this draft and just said that, we'll just sort of go through the motions. There's a very heavy evaluation that's been going on for months with the draft. And like we said, maybe there's a move to be made on draft day that other teams wanted, not to say that we've planned. Maybe someone wants somebody on our roster and is willing to part with one of those top two picks, and we feel that's a deal worth doing. We'll find out.
And the thing Ed Hervey stressed to us when we were sitting down with him in advance of Combine and during the Combine itself, I mean, you can't just look at it as not having a pick until the third round. Most prognosticators would agree with this, and he said it over and over again. He has really improved the Canadian content. I mean, Suk Chung on the offensive line, one of the more sought-after free agents, especially at his position. They're going to be more nasty up front.
Yep.
And you need that with a quarterback like Mike Riley. I mean, you put all your eggs in that basket. You want to protect him and let him do his thing. Lamar Durant, Canadian Grey Cup Most Outstanding Canadian, as a guy who's won his entire career in Calgary. And local. The Canadian content, and we're not just, you know, it's our job to blow smoke, but the Canadian content for the 2019 BC Lions is set up really nicely.
Well, Canadian content is where you win championships. And I know that, you know, there's been some talk about, you know, how the Canadian content get. You can find an American defensive back, you know, in a sports bar in Miami if you have to. There's only so many Canadians that are playing this game at a high level. They come at a premium. I even look at guys like, to me, Terrell Davis, that free agent pickup is a huge pickup, I believe, for us. Josh Stanford could be a very valuable pickup when you start to look at depth at a Canadian receiver.
He had a big game against us last year there in Saskatchewan.
Absolutely. Yeah. There's going to be guys we're pushing guys at every single position. Tanner Dahl's a long snapper. I mean, you don't just add guys to add guys. Every position on this field is going to be pushed to its maximum. And Canadian content is where championships are won. Make no mistake, because everybody's got really good American receivers, really good American linebackers, really good American defensive backs. But it's where you have your Canadians, which is basically where you're going to make or break your team. And I think it's been proven time and time again.
Junior Luke, another guy I wanted to mention. Speaking of 2017 Combine in Regina, he was one of the top performers. And when they called his name on draft night, I think it was round two or was it round... they had two first-rounders that year.
Two first-rounders that year.
So he was the second guy they took. And it's like, yeah, that's a guy. And, you know, he's slowly but surely proved that he can be a starter in this league for many years. But again, we shall see.
We shall see.
First and Now, the official BC Lions podcast, available on iTunes, SoundCloud. Leave us a review. Tell a friend. I'm Matt Baker. He's Jamie Cartmell. Game of Thrones. Anyone die this week? Spoilers. Like, don't... If you plug your ears for 30 seconds.
I think now it's kind of like... It's like they've rented some land, and now it's like a big family reunion. So now everyone's coming back to their... Northern castle, I forget what it's called, and everyone's there. And then Yeah, so they're all getting ready to fight these zombies. So it's I don't consider myself a Game of Thrones expert, but you could probably send me your Game of Thrones questions, and I could probably oh, remember when I told you about the guy who maybe dug his sister a little bit too much?
Had some kids.
Well,
yeah.
At one point, he shoved a kid who was climbing a wall, ooh, and that kid now just like eyeballs everybody. He's in a wheelchair, so he had to deal with that. It's the first time since season one, I think, that they've seen each other again. So the guy who shoved the kid,
cool,
and but this kid kind of sits in his makeshift wheelchair in different spots outside, like no one ever really seen. And then he's upstairs, so I'm not exactly sure if they had already looked into ramps and stuff for this guy, but it seems a little fishy that this kid seems to sort of be everywhere. But he can't walk. So that's a little, you know, that's a bit of a bump for me in that show.
I'll tell you how close I got to Game of Thrones on Easter Sunday. My dad at the duty free bought a Game of Thrones whiskey bottle. I forget the actual brand of it, but it's a Game of Thrones bottle. And then he blasted the theme on his wireless speaker, which he's really proud of. And he poured a bunch of shots for me and my aunts and uncles and did a nice family toast. My parents are hooked on it. So that's close I got.
As long as it didn't
end up... I drank a shot of whiskey out of a Game of Thrones bottle. How's that?
Good for you. As long as it didn't end up like the Red Wedding, because that would mean that half your family, it would now be dead.
The Red Wedding?
Yes. That was a really bad... It's all like all these uninvited guests to a bad wedding, and then it just went south from there. Bad.
Maybe I should watch.
Yeah. You give it a shot, man. You'll be... I don't know. You'll be hooked. That's a waste of time. I wouldn't bother with it.
Training camp while you're sprinting up Mount Thompson River or whatever the trail is. I'll maybe stay in the room and download it.
It's the Keenan Cartwright Park or something like that. I have my map tucked away in my desk. It reminds me I got to start packing up for camp. But
I see you got your jogging and your hiking shoes. The treadmills aren't working here, but you got your shoes out anyway.
I believe I have single-handedly destroyed both treadmills down in the workout area. They both have signs that say out of order. So
all
I think
that high-level sprinting.
Well, I mean, I guess the weather's turned. I could probably go outside now, but I don't want to take credit, but maybe I could take the blame for destroying treadmills. That's me, treadmill destroyer.
How ironic is that? The treadmills in this place do not work. Anyway, we talked about the CFL draft. Of course, it's the NFL draft this week, and we're not here to do what a lot of people who aren't qualified do, you know, give their hot takes, give their mock drafts.
I have been working on my mock draft all weekend, Matt. You don't want to hear my mock draft?
I do, maybe after the show. I don't know if our listeners want to hear it. I do.
Before you start your mock draft, just don't. Just don't. Go for a walk.
I enjoy the NFL draft, one, because the team I root for, San Francisco, it seems they have a high pick every year. pick second, and of course, if they didn't beat the Seahawks in overtime near the end of the year, they'd be picking first. But anyway, I digress. The thing I'm impressed with the NFL draft is it really has become a reality show, a made-for-TV event, and they're moving it around cities now, and you see fans in the stands going crazy. That's really cool.
Well, yeah, there's no dollar that the NFL hasn't sought to claim amongst its fan base. That's for sure. Yeah, you cannot be anything but impressed by the way the NFL keeps itself relevant all 12 months of the year.
Big time.
So, you know, within weeks of the Super Bowl, you know, you've got the combine. And right after the combine, obviously, is the draft. And you've got OTAs. And then it's before you know it, you're in the training camp and away you go. They and Major League Baseball has tried to do it, maybe not quite to the same level. And even the NHL, you can see, is starting to do that too. But no league keeps itself relevant during its off days than the NFL.
Yeah, it's big time. And NFL films, we've talked a lot about NFL films and the great job they do, and seems they have archival footage for days. And it talked about like the 83 draft with Elway and the six quarterbacks that went in the first round, and of course Elway not reporting to Baltimore and
Indianapolis.
That 30 for 30.
Oh, you're right. No, were they?
It was Baltimore. They moved after that.
They were still the Colts.
Yeah,
you're right. My bad. Yeah, Colts. We have our Colts, but you're right. Either way, he was not going to be a Colt.
It sort of talked about how that kind of was the first draft that was a made-for-TV event.
And even that, it was just in, I think, you know, yeah, just in the hotel lobby there where...
The Sheraton in Times Square, yeah.
It's a great 30 for 30, you're right. Yeah, they've... yeah, it's as... I always wonder, is it a reaction to fan interest or do they are they trying to sort of, you know, cultivate more fan interest? And it almost seems like... I think someone kind of got the thought when they, you know, there's people kind of hanging over the draft, yelling things and everything else. They probably thought, let's take this to a bigger stage because even it still took a while after that before it became what it is today.
Right.
But they should do that with the Major League Baseball draft. Don't they have like 72 rounds of,
well, they keep adding, if it depends what general manager has a godson who they want to make a courtesy pick. They just add picks, I think. They think they add rounds as they go, kind of thing.
But no, it's very, very smart. I mean, Friday is a huge day, and then they, I mean, they could very easily do all...
Condense it.
They could very easily condense it. But, you know, but it's, hey, it's, there's people who, they have an audience hungry for that content, and God bless them, they deliver.
Yep, so very exciting times. Arizona on the clock. For now, who knows? People think they might trade down. For the longest time, they were talking about taking Kyler Murray, which seems ridiculous because a lot of people high on Josh Rosen, whom they took in the first round last year. But should be interesting times.
There are some teams that, and it's kind of funny, too, how some teams just never seem to ever get it right.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, there's some
teams. No exact science to it, just like hockey and all the other sports. It reminded me of a funny story. Barry McDonald and Don Taylor, a couple of institutions in local sports media. A couple of years ago, they had Dan Patrick on their show.
Mm-hmm.
It was a great interview, fascinating stuff. And you know how Dan Patrick was and still is, I guess, famous for that man cave where he broadcast the show and he has all kinds of memorabilia.
Yep.
I think BMAC Barry asked him a question near the end of the interview. What's the most interesting piece of merchandise in the man cave?
Oh, yeah.
And this is fascinating stuff, how he would have got a hold of this. Dan Patrick said, I think, that he had the Ryan Leaf jersey that Indianapolis would have presented to him. Taken Ryan Leaf over Peyton Manning in, what was it, 1998?
Yes.
Of course, that was a decision that could have very badly altered their franchise had they...
Yes.
So he's got the Ryan Leaf Indianapolis jersey that they would have given him. I don't know how he would have got a hold of that.
My brother and I, we used to do football trips all the time. I saw that Apple Cup game when...
With Ryan Leaf.
When Washington State beat Washington in Washington. I was at that game, and they had this giant flag... that was just a giant leaf, like a maple leaf, not a true maple leaf, but like a maple tree type leaf. It was very interesting. It was a great game. And it's kind of funny when you look back at certain, like, I mean, didn't have any. I also saw a game, Washington USC, which Keyshawn Johnson was in that game. He ended up like a 6-6 tie or a 16-16 tie. The winner was going to, or Washington had the win to go to the Rose. But
at Pullman or at California?
No, in Washington. USC.
Yeah.
Washington.
Sorry. USC. I had Washington State. Well, you know, Drew Bledsoe, Ryan Leaf.
That's right. You got
it's
Washington.
It's a very cougar-like show.
You got
today.
The Cougars on your brain. But yeah, it was interesting to see that. I mean, Ryan Leaf was, he was a god at Washington State during his college days there. But yeah, that's, and it's been very interesting to see his return to normalcy, I guess, to some. He gets a lot of flack on social media from people, but as he's really tried to sort of reclaim his life. You know, he's married now and has a son. He was even in our offices.
Is that right?
Yeah, a few years ago. I think just before you got here, he paid a visit. I think he was interested in coming to camp as a guest coach, and he met with Wally for a time, and it didn't come to fruition. And I'm not sure. Wally got a call from somebody just asking if he would talk to him. And he did. And he was very nice. And I just don't think that was just, you know, Wally's very, you know, obviously a very giving person and stuff. But in the end, it has to sort of benefit the club as well.
Exactly.
I just don't think he saw anything that would sort of benefit the club in that regard. But football has a lot of connections.
It is 6 degrees of separation. So. Yeah, very much should be a couple of intriguing days south of the border. What's trending here? Let's take a look.
What's trending?
All right. Fancy new production value on this podcast. See, we're like getting it there. Week like by that. Week. There's another Avengers movie coming out this weekend, Jamie.
Oh,
I know
good.
You got your tickets. You're going to see the midnight screening on Thursday.
Yeah. Didn't it already come out? Like, I don't want to be, for some of the internal experts on the other side of the office there, I don't want to be negative, but comic book movies, enough. Have we lost? I'm just waiting for The Irishman to come out. Pacino,
that's the
De Niro.
Netflix one, right?
Yes. Like, let's get back to movies.
That's right up our alley.
I will say this, that the movies with the comic book characters and stuff, the CGI has come such a long way that it looks less CGI-ish. If you know what I mean? Like, those middle Star Wars movies were so over the top with that early CGI. They were just awful.
You're talking like the Phantom Menace and those ones, right? Yeah.
But the more recent ones, they look so good and they don't go overboard, but what they can do is make it look so good. One thing that always struck me during these comic book movies is, you have something awful happen, with 9/11, with, two buildings coming down and lives lost. But during these movies where these huge guys are going through these, smashing these buildings and buildings are blowing up, like, there's never any reference to the, what would have to be thousands upon thousands of civilian deaths. It's just sort of, Iron Man makes a joke to Spider-Man who challenges Thor to hit some guy with his hammer, and then they all kind of laugh it up and away they go. But in the wake of what the bad guy has done, there's been thousands upon thousands of deaths. Half has to be, doesn't there?
Well, yeah, ironically enough, and again, not to get off on a tangent here now, but when that happened, when 9/11 happened, that's one of the first things I and a lot of people thought of. That looks like something out of a Jerry Bruckheimer movie or something like that.
It's funny how we can, again, I'm not, I'm not going kind of crazy on these things, but I kind of think, geez, if they're hitting that building, you're also sort of led to believe there's a lot of people in that building and that building's not there anymore. Or, what was the one where they destroyed where the Steelers play? Was that Batman?
That was Batman. Movie? That was The Dark Knight Rises. Yeah. Lions Field.
Can't think.
Ben Roethlisberger and Bill Cower had cameos on the sidelines during
that's right.
national
yeah.
anthem.
Yeah. Crazy.
And again, not to get off on a tangent, but one of my favorite De Niro movies of all time was The Fan. You ever see The Fan with Robert De Niro?
Terrible.
How in the hell did Major League Baseball sign off on that, where a player would get murdered in the shower and then the umpire would get murdered? And like, how the hell did they sign off on that?
I think, to me, Robert De Niro is a knife salesman.
Yes, going door to door. Are you happy with your current supplier?
Not only that, but weren't they playing that one in the rain? They would have easily called
that's
that game.
I mean,
it was really
the
raining
downpour,
that hard. Yeah. Not unlike Bruce Willis said, I think, in The Last Boy Scout. Did you ever see that?
Yes, I did.
Where they're playing that game in the rain.
That was
just a torrential downpour.
They filmed that at the Coliseum in LA, I think.
Yeah, it was.
But now you're making me laugh, because remember De Niro was shaving his legs to demo the
eyes? Right. Yeah. What was the ball player's name again?
Bobby Rayburn.
Bobby. Didn't he have Bobby's kid, too?
Yeah.
With him in the
stands? Took his son, yeah.
Gosh.
Yeah, we're going fishing.
That's just, yeah.
At night, there's no boats to scare the fish away.
Not only that, but can you think of a more unlikely fan base than one in San Francisco to be that much in love with their team?
Oh, my God.
Or in love with one player? Yeah,
but
that
getting
was just
it circling
awful.
Back to the Avengers, this is going to be the largest opening weekend ever. That's what Alex, our fill-in producer this week, has told us.
And I know you have to sort of balance that for inflation, but I mean, come on. I mean, I saw Star Wars as a kid. It was like $1.50. No lie. Like, at the Londonderry cinema. Movies are now what? $38, And
if you want to see it in IMAX,
sure.
If you want to book your
seats. It's a lot easier to get to $100 million or $500 million when you're charging 25 bones a person to see the movie. But I would like to see what some true classic movies from the past would average out at. I'm sure it still doesn't compare, obviously, because populations have grown. There's more movie theaters than there ever has been and everything else.
So, several more, yeah.
But at the same time, what you saw movies, they were lined up for days. You couldn't buy advanced tickets like you can now online and then just roll in. Like, you waited in line.
you waited in line and you wondered if it would be sold out by the time you got to the window. Remember how big of a rush that was?
My dad, we were going to see, as a kid, he took us, my brother and I, to see Close Encounters of a Third Kind. We get to the first theater, it's sold out. We race to another theater. Yeah. I don't know. I was probably seven. No idea where we are. We get to the next theater. There's basically three seats left in the entire theater in the front row. So I, as a kid,
so you saw
Close Encounters of a Third Kind in the front row of the theater. I wasn't the same for months.
You had a sore neck for two
years. Well, not only that, but you're like so freaked out by what's going on. And you're just like, what is happening in this movie? You have no idea. And then, it was a crazy experience. But yeah, you know what? It's funny. I bet you if you ask people, some of their best sort of, not best life experiences, but you can sort of track your life sometimes by your favorite movies. It's not unlike your favorite music, right? Mm-hmm. I think that's why people just fall in love with certain genres of music or certain movies, because it just sort of comes in that time period for them. I think like my younger sisters, they loved The Breakfast Club. They could do it line for line for line.
16 Candles and all that stuff.
But,
yeah.
You know, it's not that it's a bad movie.
It's
but,
okay.
But there are some people who just will go to the grave saying that certain movies are just awesome because it just sort of comes at a certain time in their life that they sort of, I guess, romanticize about, you know, staying in that sense. But I can see that.
I think the first, speaking of sold out, I think the first time I ever encountered a movie being sold out, I was just crushed. The first Ninja Turtles movie in 1990, I want to say.
Wow.
Yeah, 6-year-old Matt Baker may have shed a few tears.
I honestly
sold out. I can't go see it tonight.
I can't think of ever. I've had some bad seats at movie theaters, but I can't remember ever being at a theater where you just could not get in. But that's
Yeah,
times have changed. So enjoy whatever this. I'm sure they're probably making the next one as we speak. Does this one even end?
Oh, it'll
it's
be
end
out.
End game.
Next,
is it actually
out by the time we get to Kamloops? There'll be another one out. I think we can go see it.
I know. I mean, their job is to make money for their shareholders, and
people
they
keep
do,
craving
and
the product,
people go.
Then...
So, but it just would be nice to see us move on to some, you know, to movies that just were based on real life people. I mean, you know that.
Yeah.
That will get made. I mean, you know, they're going to make movies that make money. That's unfortunately the way it goes, but it would just be nice to see some, you know, some movies that you didn't think much of. Like, even like, I remember when Pulp Fiction came out, nobody knew who the hell Quentin Tarantino was.
No.
That movie kind of came out of nowhere. It was, I think, almost an independent film. It was, you know, and all of a sudden it was like one of the best movies
cult
you'd
classic.
Seen. It. Yeah. It's a classic, but there was no big,
hype. Yeah.
John Travolta in a comeback role. Nobody knew who Samuel L. Jackson was. I mean, is there movies that kind of come out of nowhere anymore that do that?
That's a good
probably,
point.
I guess. I'm not, you know, the entertainment reporter, but, you know, I don't think we're not surprised anymore. It's just, there's a lot of anticipation, which is good, but you never get to be surprised by anything that you knew nothing about, went and saw, or got recommended to you and just blew you away.
Speaking of what's trending very quickly, apparently it's World Book Day. I know you're an avid reader. What are you reading these days?
I'm going back and I'm reading a lot of Elmore Leonard books. I'm reading Rum Punch. Punch became Out of Sight with George Clooney and stuff. They're kind of fast reads. They're kind of fun. So I'm just sort of
easy to skim through. Well, not
getting in
through.
There. And yeah, I got a lot to catch up on, but I've been so busy with painting rooms and flipping decks and everything else. I can't really find any time for myself. Well, that it really is what I most deserve, is a little time to myself. Can't wait for camp.
Yeah, it'll be a lot of that. A lot of alone time in Kamloops. Quickly, we talked, we'll bring it full circle. We talked about Drew Bledsoe in the first segment. I just finished Ian O'Connor's Bill Belichick book.
Yeah.
That's somewhat fascinating. Didn't learn a whole lot. It's one of those where he was not able to interview Belichick himself, but there was a lot of unattributed, unnamed sources. Some guys went on the record, and some of Bill Belichick's early life was interesting when it talked about being the son of a World War II naval hero.
Yeah.
And how his dad got him into football, and how he wasn't the most skilled player, but he was his football smarts, and he knew he wanted to get into coaching. So kind of how he got into coaching, and the whole relationship with Parcells, how that was all kind of up and down over the years. So that was decent. Long read, but a good read.
Yeah, it's when things are sort of unattributed, not unlike that Aaron Rodgers article that came out last week.
Yeah.
I was talking about it with Devon, and one of the things I always... I guess either I really miss the point or I really pick up on things that other people don't. But one of the most interesting parts of that whole article to me that I ended up talking to Devon about was because it was an offensive team with an offensive coach, the whole style of the coaching was all about the offense all the time. Even in training camp, where when we go to, you know, where you go from, say, a walkthrough into some individual drills and then everything else, and then you might break into, when we say team, that means offense versus defense. You get into a team situation. In Green Bay, the defense always had to run to where the offense was. And it really pissed off the guys on defense that they always had to run to where Aaron Rodgers was on the field. I mean, because you're in training camp, they probably had four different fields, but it was always the defense running to the offense and the offense waiting for the defense to arrive. And it's interesting that players will pick up on that and say, like, why are we always sort of bowing down to the offense? And then, and things that are not lost on Devon, where I mentioned it, because I thought the same thing, because I was reading the same thing. I thought, so that's the challenge of being a head coach, especially when you're a coach, and they always are, they sort of lean towards one side of the ball or the other. Devon's obviously a defensive head coach, just like Wally was. You have to be conscious of dividing your time and your attention equally to both sides of the ball, because now more than ever, in the generation that we're living in, you know, people get butt hurt for the most menial things. And guess what? Even having to walk to the other side of the field, there's going to be potentially half your team upset about it.
Yeah.
Which is very interesting, kind of sad, but an interesting human dynamic in a sense that they have to be, you know, be conscious of as a head coach.
So yes, and obviously that's a guy, again, he's had to deal with egos and the whole Brady Bledsoe thing, and he got rid of players, popular players, Richard Seymour, a prime example.
He got rid of them.
It was interesting read.
Yeah, I mean, I would say get rid of them, but moved on from players.
Business decisions. Law, another one.
He recognized that there's certain positions on the field that are replaceable. One of them being the running back. How many running backs has he had win Super Bowls?
An assembly line.
Exactly. Yeah. And they've all been effective. Why? Because, as he would tell you, just do your job. It's a system. The system will make you great. Just do your job. And you can't criticize that, because the success is right there.
First and now, we encourage you to leave us a review. Thank you for listening. Hit us up on Twitter. He is at SweetJimmyC. I am at BakesTakes84. Any Lions questions we'll happily take and hit on them next week in episode 11. This was fun.
Yeah, it was a good one. I enjoyed it, Matty.
Very much so.
Good work. By you, always.
Yeah, I was okay. Thank you, everybody. It's about 45 solid.